You are now entering the world of Blissful Living, broadcasting around the globe and on the Blissful Living Network with Rochelle Marie Lawson. Are you lacking energy, clarity, and that sense of true well-being? Are you overworked, underpaid, and know that you deserve more in life? You are not alone. Improve your wellness, wisdom, and wealth so that you can step into living the life of your dreams. And now, here's your host of Blissful Living, the queen of feeling fabulous, Rochelle Marie Lawson.
Hello, everyone. It's the queen of feeling fabulous, Rochelle Marie Lawson. And I want to welcome you to the Blissful Living Show. Today's show is going to be very special. And the reason I'm saying it's going to be very special, because when my guest begins to talk and we begin to have our conversations where he's bestowing wisdom and golden nuggets of information upon us, you're going to recognize some things and you're going to be like, oh my God, Rochelle Marie has really outdone herself this time. So just hold tight. As you know, I like to say, find you a nice place to sit, get you your favorite beverage, something to write with, tell the kids to give you a few moments if you can, and just take this time to be with yourself and enjoy this day. And particularly enjoy this nice conversation that I'm going to have with my guest that I'm going to tell you about in a minute. But before we get to the guest, I want to thank our sponsors. The first one I want to thank is the Blissful Living For You at blissfullivingforyou.com. Go check them out. They have an abundance of wonderful health things that you can utilize for your fitness and your health and well-being as we roll into the warmer months. These are some goodies that you're going to want to have. And let me just tell you, one of the goodies they have is called the Butt-Ass Naked Smoothie, guaranteed to get your body right by the time summertime rolls in. That's all I'm going to say, okay? So check out Blissful Living For You at blissfullivingforyou.com. The next sponsor of the show I would like to let you all know about is All Day Cable Incorporated. And All Day Cable Incorporated is a telecommunications installation company located in the heart of Silicon Valley. They've been in business for 30 years, and they specialize in network distribution, which is installing voice data, fiber optic cabling, wireless system, access points, audio, video, you name it. They do it when it comes to helping us to telecommunicate in today's world efficiently and making those right connections the first time. So if you have a need, they handle the Western region. If you have a need, or you have a company or you know someone that has a need, whether it's residential, a small business, or a corporate, you want to talk to the guys at All Day Cable, and you can talk to them or find out more about them at alldaycableinc.com. Okay, so now that I've taken care of the business, hopefully that gave you some time to like just sit back, find a spot to chill and relax. Because my conversation today is going to be with a phenomenal guest. And if it's someone that's around my age, or even maybe younger, my kids' age, you'll know who I'm talking about, and you'll know who he is by just some of the things we talk about. So check this out. Recently featured in the fun auto insurance commercial for Geico, the 90s classic real school hip-hop duo tag team is back on top. Bursting onto the scene with their Top of the Pops hit and automatically became one of those songs that sticks in your head. Whoop, there it is. The track quickly climbed to number one on Billboard and R&B charts in just 14 days. The song continues to appeal to admirers who were raised in the 90s and appeals to new enthusiasts of every era, and is recognized as a true symbol of its time, or of the time. Whoop, there it is, has been showcased in world-class nationwide ad campaigns, as well as in Hollywood hit motion pictures and television series. Now, okay, you kind of feeling me a little bit for the yes is. Now, let me tell you who we're talking to tonight. So, tag team pioneers, DC the Brain Supreme and Steve Rowland, stay dedicated to entertaining fans and delivering old-school hip-hop blowouts to hotspots around the world. Audiences for tag team events vary in ages from very young to the old school from the old school, and Whoop delivers that 90s experience like no other. DC Glenn and Steve love the powerful experience of looking over a jam-packed arena and comprehending how much their simple song has inspired the lives of countless millions throughout the world. The legendary tune and the dynamic high school friends captivate those of every generation as their style speaks to folks who remember when hip-hop was truly hip-hop. The degree of anticipation at tag team's concerts is almost palpable as fans wait in delight for the high-energy party that's to come. And so my guest today is none other than DC, the Brain Supreme. Hi, DC. Welcome to Blissful Living. How you doing?
Hey. First of all, skirt. Okay. Why are you sitting up here lying to these folks? Why are you sitting up here and trying to make me seem like a brainiac and reading all that stuff? It's not even like that.
Well, you know what? You shouldn't hide your talent.
I'm just a dude. And what's that? What was that? Butt naked bus? What was that? That smoothie?
Butt ass naked smoothies?
You can't throw nothing like that out there and not explain. What? How you going to throw that out
okay,
there
tell
and
me, what
be
you...
like, go get the smoothie? How you going to do that? And say, trust me,
okay.
It'll work by the summer.
Here's the thing. They are, I know personally, they are delightful. They're not complex, and there's a flavor for everybody. But all you have to do is drink one of those smoothies, and you can pick your favorite or, you know, try them all, but drink one of those smoothies. Once a day, and within 3 weeks, you will definitely notice a difference in your metabolism, the way you feel, the way you look, right? So, and we got time right now. So when the summertime comes rolling around, you start that, say, at the end of March, I'm telling you, you're going to be looking stellar.
Hey.
So good that you can be showing your butt ass naked on the beach. Well,
when you said that, you caught me in the middle of a yawn. I almost choked on some shit. What you talking about?
Yeah.
But on a serious note, I do appreciate being here tonight, y'all. And I'm just a humble brother who made a song back in the day. And my goal for the rest of my days is just to talk to people, impart my wisdom or my stories or my experience upon you the way I wish someone had done to me when I was a young man.
Right.
And I think that's my mission. That's my responsibility in life. And that's my responsibility to anybody who wants to listen to me talk. So that's why I'm here tonight. And I'm just glad to be here and ready to chop it up. Let's go.
All right. I want to ask you, we had a conversation, right? And we just kind of had a lot of similarity, people that we know and things of that nature. But what I want to ask you is I want to take it back to before you and Steve even, you know, started tag team. How did you guys come together and form tag team?
I was born in Chicago, moved to Denver when I was 4, and went to Catholic school to 10th to 11th grade. And I got a great education, but I still lived, you know, in the black community. I still was raised by a great community. We got to play. I had a wonderful childhood. And, you know, my mom was like, if you want to go to a public school, you can go to a public school. And I was like, yeah, I need to get up out of here. And I went to a school called Manual High School in Denver, Colorado, in my junior year. And homeroom, dude named Steve Gibson sat by me because my name is Glenn, his name is Gibson. So we sat by each other, and we became friends. And, you know, they had a band, right, where they would play in the quad. And first time I see them play, I wanted to be in the band because Steve played the drums. And I was like, yo, you got to let me in this band. And they was like, man, go on, man. And I was like, dude, I can sing, right? And I've always been musically inclined, but I wanted to be in that band. And I also wanted to be in the choir because I worked in the office with the elders, right? All the black ladies in the school who would teach me how to be a man. They did a good job, too,
right.
I tell you. And down the hall was Miss Davis's room, and the choir was called Boat Vibrations, and they would go on field trips and sing everywhere. Just really a Colorado renowned. And I wanted to be in that, too. And because I'm a tenacious person, and I don't take no for an answer, and I figure out how to get myself in front of people, and I'm prepared when I get my chance. Steve and him let me in the band, and Miss Davis let me in the choir, and I was a singing fool in high school and had a good time.
I love it.
And then one of my first high school parties, Steve and a couple other crews from around Denver came and DJed, and that's when I was exposed to DJing, two turntables and a microphone. And I was I gotta have that too, right? So I went and bought an old raggedy Sherwood turntable and a raggedy Technic turntable and a Radio Shack mixer, and proceeded to mess up all my father's records trying to cut and scratch and do like some dudes was doing. And everybody in the neighborhood was laughing at me because I wouldn't come out and play with them no more because I was always downstairs DJing. And,
right.
You know, I was terrible, but that's what I wanted to do. And any type of mastery in life, you got to practice. You got to put in reps.
Exactly.
You know, I didn't know it at the time, but that's just something I really wanted to do and something I was passionate about, right? And,
mm-hmm.
You know, that comes from my parents because they really, they beat the work ethic in me. Now, they didn't beat the work ethic in me. Every now and then, they made me go put my own switch. That's about it. But.
Yeah, I can relate.
You know, but, you know, no, but my mother had me stemming collard greens and shucking peas, you know, at the age of 5 or 6.
Right.
And when I got a little older, I started cleaning chitlins. And then my grandmother taught me how to cook. My third grade summer, my grandma taught me how to cook my first thing, which was a lemon meringue pie and a chess pie.
Ooh.
That's how I became, that was a skinny kid turned into a fat kid. But I cooked pies all summer. So fast forward back to high school, and I'm doing all these things, and I graduate, and we had a great summer because we would play at all the clubs in Denver because I would go set everything up. And then I moved to California, went to Sac State University. And I got out there and thought I was the greatest DJ ever and did my first Omega Sci-Fi party. And the speakers blew, and I was picking up the turntable off the wrong turntable, and they was about to beat me up. But we got through it. and any normal human would have quit right there, right? But, you know, I knew I had to, you know, I knew I had work to do. It was like you thought you was the bomb and you wasn't, right? And
right,
it was a lesson in humility. And
a humble,
you know,
humbling experience, right?
Humbling experience where life beats you down and says, hey, young fella, you got to put in work. So I was already accustomed to work, and I just went back to the drawing board, just kept practicing and practicing and practicing. And I would even clear out all of the tables and chairs in the dining commons because they had a PA system and throw parties on Friday nights for everybody in the dorm. So I became real notable for that. Yeah, and after about a year, the sororities gave me another shot, and I was ready, and I never looked back. And I started doing the clubs, and I started doing everything. And around that time, like my between my freshman and sophomore year, my boy, Johnny Z, he produced In Too Deep, Back to the Hotel back in the day, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we met in college, right? And he was a rich white kid, and, you know, I exposed him to hip-hop and everything, taught him how to DJ, taught him how to make music and everything. He bought a four-track, didn't know how to use it, and he had a little janky Yamaha drum machine. And I was like, I'll figure it out. And then that's what started my song-making abilities. Because we would go to the studio when I would come home for, you know, we go to the real studio and record tracks, right? But me just doing it myself with a Tascam four-track with a cassette tape was a whole new experience. And my boy had an 808.
Oh, I bet.
And I was like, hey, man, let me use that 808. Because I knew the 808, you know, that was the time of Run DMC and everything. So you knew you had to have an 808. And he was like, you crazy. Like, but you can come over and make some beats, right? So I went over and took four tracks, made about 10 beats, and then just came back and just over the next month, just start filling those beats up, scratches, pots and pans, little kid flutes, pianos, whatever I could get to put on, put music on the song, wrote lyrics, and sent my first mixtape to Steve, and he thought I was in the devil worship because I was just, I was tripping, right? Like, I mean, you know, I was just trying to put sounds on me. I was doing anything I could think of, right? But then
he
realized what it was. And after he listened to it enough, he was like, man, that stuff is banging, dude. And that was like my first time. And he got a four-track. And then we just start having these little four-track competitions back and forth because he was in Denver and I was in Cali. And we got better and better and better and better to the point where he moved to Atlanta and went to the Art Institute. And
oh, wow.
I went to, in 88. And then I went down to visit him for Christmas. And they took me. Him and one of our other boys, they were like, man, we're going to take you somewhere. And they took me to a club called Magic City, right? Magic City is one of the world-renowned adult entertainment clubs in the world. And they took me in there, and I had $500 in my pocket. Half hour later, I had zero. They took all my money.
Are you still in Atlanta?
Tinkle and Sparkle took all my money. Right then and there, I knew that I was moving to Atlanta because when I came to Atlanta, the one thing I saw that I had never seen in my life is just all black people living in harmony. Because I grew up, we grew up interracial, right? Where we grew up with
black folks, Mexicans,
you know, and we all got along.
Right.
Yeah, but
right,
to see
exactly.
A city full of black folks in harmony. Because this was back in, you know, late '89. And when I got down here, the weekend I got down here, the first thing we did was go to the movies. We went and seen Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing.
Yeah.
And it was just harmony down here. It was the beginning of the summer. Everybody was doing festivals. It was incredible. And I'm glad I moved here. I've been here ever since. And
wow.
I hit turf. I started doing competitions, dance competitions, whatever, just entertaining.
Right.
And I went to Magic City because I had a job at CNN, and I had hooked up, and I went to Magic City, and the DJ was terrible. And I was like, you know what?
Wow.
I could do this a little bit on the side and then, you know, still have a day job. And, you know, dude named Tim, security guard, he's like, go Magic right there. I was like, hey, man, you need a DJ? He's like, nah, I don't need no DJ. Come see me Monday, right? And he's like, I don't need no DJ, but I need a cook.
Come see me Monday,
like,
right.
Yeah, I can chef a little bit. So I can say, you can be the cook and backup DJ. I'm going to hire another cook, and then we'll be straight. And went upstairs, cooked about two salads, and ordered chicken wings. I'll never forget it. And the other DJ was like, hey, man, can you just cover for me for a little while, man, while I go run some errands. I'm like, all right. And, you know, that's back to the beginning of hip-hop. You don't let nobody you know, drive your car. You don't know if you're going to get it back
exactly.
or not.
Exactly. Exactly.
And all that hard
like,
work.
I don't know you like that.
In,
right.
All everybody in the neighborhood who laughed at me, all that paid off that day because heads were turning. And girls were dancing a little bit harder, and money was coming out a little bit more than it usually was. And I DJ'd all day, and I showed them how to really make some money. And we had a meeting that Sunday. We had a monthly meeting with all the girls, 100 girls, and Magic and the DJs. And Indiegogo, her name was Indiegogo, she got up, and she was like, Magic, before we do anything, we want him. They all pointed at me, and he was like, all right, you up? And I was the head DJ and never looked back. And,
you're sharing some good, you're sharing that. I mean, it's amazing because you, what I'm getting is that you just kept working at your craft, and you kept working at your craft, and you kept working at your craft, and you didn't hold back when you saw an opportunity. You actually said, I'm going to, you know, let me take this opportunity real quick, right? And all of that has paid off. as you know, you're telling us, you're sharing your story with us, all of that has paid off and has led you, they say you're on one step, it's led you to the next step and the next step and the next step. Exactly. So tell us more. So now what happened after, you know, you got the club making money, the girls are making money, the, you know, everybody happy, you know, drinks are flowing, money's flowing, girls are dancing, magic is happy. What happened from that point where you and Steve came up with, you know, this this iconic song that, you know, I think will just live on forever?
All right, so once I started working in Magic City, right, it was really overwhelming because, you know, you take a kid from Denver, Colorado, and throw him in the mix with 100 butt-naked women every night, it's just going to be overwhelming. Right, but the beauty of it for me is that I was liberated as a man, right? Because you know, I realized that women was not the only thing in life. You know, like just trying to get women to have sex with like everybody else was doing, that's not the most important thing in life. And
there's more to life than that.
The most important thing in life is the relationships you build, right? And because of that club, I built relationships with every last one of those girls, and I was on their side, right? And the more relationships I built in that club with all the girls, the more money I made because they didn't have to fear me. They didn't have to. I was the safe place. The DJ booth was always the safe place where they could come. And they would tell me their, you know, I was their brother, their father, their uncle, their pimp, their daddy. I was everything to them, right? Because I was the one that was giving them, I was nurturing them. But then I was learning at the same time, right? So I tell you that because for me, it was better for me to be on their side than the other side, right? Which means that we all in this together and we're going to make this money. And I've always been a hustler from when I was a kid, you know, shoveling snow. We had a snowblower, you know, going around and doing the whole neighborhood for free, and then we just get money, right? Because you give what you want first, having the paper route, you know, being the AV guy when I was 14, working at Dolly Madison Ice Cream when I was 16, working at PJ's Pasta when I was 17, working at the restaurants, like just always working, right? Because I was never fearful of work, and I'm never scared of work because of my mother and my father. So, you know, back to Magic City, you know, I'm DJing and, you know, I'm learning so much because it's a different ball game. We in the South. And how it used to work as far as records and everything, just from the DJ club perspective, is that all the record companies had representatives back then. They still do, but they really had them back then. Everybody had a rep in a region. So the Southeast region would be in Atlanta, and they would send all the records, you know, from, you know, Columbia or Warner Brothers or Epic, A&M, all those labels back then, to the rep. And then the rep would just come and drop them off, like, here your records, man, right? And they really wouldn't follow up. But one cat, his name was Doug Craig, worked for Epic, and he had a record he really was trying to break. And he was like, DC, man, if you could play this a little bit and just give me some feedback on it, man, I really would appreciate it, right? I was like, all right, I got you. And I started playing it. And then he came back in a week, and he was like, so what you think about that record? I was like, oh, the Candyman record? He was like, yeah. He was like, hold on. I was like, Candy, come here. Like, you going up next. I said, you like that Candyman record? Man, I love that thing. He's like, okay, you up next. Because I knew she loved that record, and I knew that she was going to dance good to it, right? When I played the record for him, and he saw her dancing just really good to, you know, how they dance good, which is seductive and booty shaking, all that.
Yeah.
He saw that the gentleman started liking it, too, because she liked it.
Right.
And he saw the amount of money that started flowing into her garter. Because they liked it as well as she did, and it blew him away. And that, for me, was the beginning of breaking records, right?
Right.
Because I told him, I said, she's not the only one that likes it. There's three other girls that like it. So four girls like your record. You work an eight-hour shift. You got to play it every time they go on stage. They go on stage twice a night. That's eight plays. That's a play an hour. That's radio.
Right, right.
In the streets,
wow.
Right, where it really counts.
Right.
Where everybody came to that club, where it's packed from noon all the way to 4 a.m. So
right.
That was there are certain evolutions of things that I was privy to and that I was a part of because I just come up with solutions and I stay pressing, right? So then I turned mm-hmm. that into working with all of the reps, right? And now I'm getting all the records. Everybody starts to know me for the guy who really can make their record pop, make them look good, help them keep a job, because if New York is like, they ain't doing nothing in the South, we need to get rid of him and get somebody else, they can come to me and be like, DC, you know, I can help them. I'm like, okay, this record's doing this, this is doing that. Then they write a report, send it back. I go this deep to tell you this because I was never just a DJ, right?
Right, right.
When in anything you do in life, you have to make yourself invaluable. So I have to be invaluable to all the girls because I make the money. I have to be invaluable to the club because I'm the only one that can change all their lighting. I'm the only one that can fix on their sound system. I'm the only one that can do all their flyers. I'm the only one that can do all their radio ads. I'm the only one that can do any of their marketing. I'm the only one that knows how to make a calendar because that's when Photoshop came out, right?
Right.
So
right.
You make yourself invaluable, and this way you end up with six streams of income in one spot. That has been my hustle forever. Right?
Wow.
So if I put my eyes on something,
hold up, DC. Hold up. Listen, did you hear what he just said? Because if you didn't, you should have been writing this down. Go on, DC. Say it one more again.
Okay, so you always have to make yourself invaluable. I've always got, you know, I might have, people might see one of my hustles and be like, man, that dude be hustling. What they don't know is that I got five hustles in the hole. Because somebody's going to copy your hustle, somebody's going to hate on your hustle, and somebody's going to try to sabotage your hustle. And one of those are going to work. And if your hustle gets muddied in the water because everybody's doing it, then I don't care because I've already got six hustles in the hole. But if that's your one thing that you just depend on in life, you're going to be messed up because now you can't. Now your money, you're making $100, you only make it 10 because there's nine other people doing what you do.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So you have to always have irons in the fire. And, you know, it is not a jack of all trades, master of none. These are hustles, okay? These are things you never give up. These are things that you nurture. These are seeds, right? And those seeds, some seeds work, some seeds do. You know what I mean? Some seeds, it just depends. Depends on the circumstance, depends on the situation. But I always was in a club. I was in the biggest clubs in Atlanta history because I was more than just a DJ, right? So as we go along, you know, I knew that we weren't going to make just the hip-hop that we was making because I'm been influenced, you know, I'm from Denver. We were influenced by Run DMC and, you know, all the New York cats and the L.A. cats because I was in California.
Back in the day.
Exactly. So it's like I couldn't. Everybody. And it's funny because I knew in the South that we was going to have to play something, make something up-tempo. So I was like, Steve, we ain't going to ever get out of here unless we do some up-tempo stuff, man. And he was like, booty shake? And I was like, I mean, we got to do it. And he was like, man, I don't even know how to make that. And I was like, don't think of it that way. I said, what is the essence of hip-hop? Essence of hip-hop, always and forever, to me, starts with Planet Rock.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because that's when the B-Boy revolution started. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
All those up-tempo records. That, you know, now you had, you know, Grandmaster Flash and The Message and all the stuff before that, right? But that was more the lyrical hip-hop. But I'm talking about the B-Boy breakdancing when the dancing came into it. And everybody figured out what to do with two turntables and a microphone. And then you had battles. And then everybody, then it was just a ferocious appetite to be the best, right? And it wasn't just New York. It was everywhere. It was in L.A. You know, think about the records that were hot then in L.A. The beginning of hip-hop in L.A. was Egypt, Dr. Dre with Surgery, all the up-tempo records, right?
Right.
So I was like, because I was there, and I was like, yo, just think Planet Rock, Egypt. Just stay in that lane, and you'll be straight. And because we don't got to make booty shit, because we're not country, right? We're not from down there. We're from Denver. It's a difference, right? But up-tempo beats, if you can rhyme and have good lyricism over up-tempo beats, you can be successful. Because we make songs all the time, and people like them. But we're talking about songs that, you know, they like them. Then we go to the next song and the next song. And, you know, you always trying to get a record deal. And you always, you know, thinking you're going to get one, but don't get one. So he made the beat. We already knew we were going to use Kano because we had talked about that years earlier. And I had a stack of rhyme books. I used to write lyrics all in college. So I had tons of rhyme books. And I was trying to match up. I would just go through and try to match up songs. Does the song match up to it? Nah, what about this one? Nope.
Right.
Let me try Woo, There It Is with it. Because I've been working on I just been writing the lyrics, right? I was halfway done with it, and it fit. And I was like, cool. And I was like, I got it, Steve. Womp, There It Is. And he was like, how you spell it? I was like, W-H-O-O-M-P. And it was starting to be a party saying in the South. You know what I mean? Like a throw your hands in the air type situation where
You
know, that's all it was. You know, it wasn't like everybody thinks that it was this mad scientist formula where we had whiteboards and, you know what I'm saying? We were calculating and trying to figure stuff out. And what they don't even understand is that it's just the song. Woomp, There It is about Magic City, me DJing on a Friday night with the club crunk. That's it. It's that simple. It's that simple, right? And we went and recorded it in August of 92. And that night I had to work. And I got a cassette tape from the engineer and got to work, put my stuff up, popped it in. And to this day, that is the biggest response on a record I have ever had. At least 15 people came to DJ booth like, what the hell is that? I'm like, that's my new joint. I just finished it, man. You like it? It's like, what? Dude, I need to have that now. I was like, dude, I just got out the studio with this. This is just my cassette, right? And we wore that out for about 2 weeks. We wore it out for about 2 weeks. And then, you know, it was just another song, right? I just was, you know, I just started playing other songs that we made because we was always in the studio making records, you know what I mean? So it wasn't nothing.
Yeah.
And I stopped playing it. And probably in January, one of the girls was like, how come you don't play that Woomp There It Is no more? I was like, cuz, you want to hear it? She's like, yeah. Like, cool. And the same thing happened. This time, a brother named Alan Cole, who worked for Columbia Records, was one of the reps, came and hollered at him. He was like, man, what is that? I was like, man, that's my new joint, dog. He was like, give that to me right now. I'm sending that to New York. And I was like, okay, I know I got something now. Let me start trying to, let me put my hat on. Let's figure something out. And I went to all the reps, gave all the reps the record, sent it out. They sent it out. People started calling me, talking about how good a record it was, but we just don't quite know what to do right now. We want to wait till next year and blah. And I was like, nah, man, we ain't got no time to be waiting. You know what I mean? Like, we got other stuff, right? I'm telling you that we got a hit, and I almost gave up. It's one of the few times in my life where I was almost like, man, I'm done, right? And I wasn't like, I'm done, but I was done with that. I was like, man, I'm not about to, because everybody kept just giving me the runaround. And a lady named Lisa McCall, like today she manages Candy Burrs, old school friend of mine, man. She's working Mercury Records, I do. And she was like, you need to call Al Bell. Al Bell used to own Stax Records back in the day. Mavis Staple, Isaac Hayes, Redding, And she was like, he put out a Deuce last year and it went gold. And I was like, that's right, Daisy Dukes. So look at that girl, them Daisy Dukes song, right?
Daisy
that record was gold. That was a big record. And I was like, cool, that's my last shot. So I called him. get his answering machine. Like, Mr. Bell, look, my name's D.C. Glenn. You need to call me. I'm in Atlanta, Georgia. I got a hit record. I've tested it. Call me. And it took him about a week to hit me back, and he called me. And I was like, look, man, I'm at the end of my rope. I got a hit record. You can call anybody and ask about it. The record's blowing up. You need to sign me. You need to do this. And he was like, all right. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like,
Hey.
You have not even heard the record. And he was like, and I'll never ever forget this. Because it is the essence of me, right? When I talk to people. It is the essence of me when me and you had our first conversation, right?
Right.
He said, brother, I don't have to hear it. I hear it in your spirit.
Oh, right? Wow.
Because I wow. hear it in your spirit. And he said, let's agree to agree, and we'll work it out, and let's go, right? And, you know, I hung up the phone, was real happy, gave my 2 weeks' notice in Magic City. My last night was Freaknik 93. And then signed a messed up contract. And a month and a half, we were platinum.
Wow.
That quick.
Wow. You know, that song was, I'm going to tell you a little, just that song. So my son, he played, you know, football, right? As you know, how the kids play this in the football league. And so his team, he was playing, he was 10, and it's a 10 or 11. His team had, they were undefeated, and they was going on, and actually ended up playing in the Super Bowl for that age group. And the theme song that we was jamming to in the stands on a very rainy, slossy, drenched, oh, horrible day for those boys was Whoop, There It Is. And it was cold, and every time we thought they were like, just like, you know, they were playing good, but every time we thought they needed a little spunk, one of the dads would start singing a song, and then somebody would play it, and then we'd be, the whole, like, all the parents in the stands would be singing that song, and those boys kicked butt that year, and then we used it the next year, they went, and so that song is just like, especially now, that son is now 30 years old, but it was, you know, I just remember when I first heard it, when it came out, you know, and I was like, oh, hey, that's a jam. Me and the girls, you know, we at the club trying to be all cute. And even today when you hear the song, it just, for me, it invokes those beautiful memories of when it first came out. Every time I hear it. So
that's it. And the beauty of it, you know, it didn't just, you know, it has some help, right? Because the person who really set it off is, you know, because I knew everybody, because everybody would come to Atlanta. They come to the club. So I knew all the rappers. I knew all the record producers. I knew everybody. And Ed Lover had came in right before, about 2 weeks before I quit. I gave my 2 weeks. And he was like, Money, what's that record? I was like, a small record, dude. He was like, man, give it to me. I was like, all right. Because we had just pressed up some cassettes, right? And I gave him a cassette. He said, man, what am I going to do with that? I need some vinyl. I was like, hey, man, I ain't got no vinyl. But let me work on it, man. He said, man, you got to get me vinyl for that, man. New York is going to go nuts for this. Watch what I tell you, D.C. So the first thing I did, I said, Mr. Bell, you got to get me at least 100 pieces of vinyl. That could be white label. Just get me vinyl, right? I could blow this record up.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, all right. About 5 days, he had me vinyl. And then Ed, it came down that weekend. I met him down in Magic City because I wasn't working there no more. And I gave him two of the vinyls, right? And he went back that Monday. And that Monday, Ed Lover and Dr. Dre played Whoop, There It Is. Back to back the whole show of your MTV rap.
Oh, wow.
And you know, everybody raps back then. And that right there, wow, right? I mean, it was already gaining because record companies were having radio. It was getting there. But that, and then 2 weeks later, the Bulls won their third championship and a half million people at Grant Park with Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan and all them up on stage chanting "Whoop, there it is" to a sea of 500,000 people chanting "Whoop, there it is" in Chicago. They was playing it on Jump WGN.
Wow.
That was the Chicago station back then, WGN, because they played the Cubs all the time. And I'm sitting on my couch with my mouth open, like, oh, my God, here we go. And after that, we were gone.
You know, I love the story. I love it. You know, you said something, and I want you to drop this nugget of gold. You've dropped so many, but you said something about relationships. And throughout the time that you've been chatting, you're, you know, intertwined in what you're sharing is the benefits and the importance of having relationships, right? And you develop these relationships with all these, you know, people that were coming down to the club, the record execs, and, you know, all that, the representatives. You weren't, you could have been pushing like that, but you weren't. You were just being you and having the relationships, right? You were just being you, and that those relationships turned into relationships of gold. So can you just share with the listeners, I want you to really just like reiterate, just in case they, you know, were busy or something, the importance of what you shared when it came to the whole aspect of relationships.
The key to relationships is you have to choose to stay in them when you have every reason not to stay in them, right?
Mm.
People like, don't hang around and talk to people. Don't do this. No. That is true, right? But sometimes you're forced to be around toxic people. You're forced to be in a toxic situation, right? So I don't burn bridges, right? I might not mess with you, but I'm not going to burn the bridge, right? I'm still going to be cordial. We're still going to be cool. I'm just not going to mess with you. You know what I mean? So for me, I choose to stay in the relationships because I know that, you know, there's a couple reasons why. Over time, I have acquired the ability to take any negative emotion and use it, right? I try to tell people this all the time. Say, hey, despair, sadness, envy, jealousy, hatred, all those negative energies, just stop. Take a deep breath, put it in your pocket, and choose when you want to use it, right?
Right.
Don't be mad for no reason. Be mad when you shoveling all that snow. Then you pull it out your pocket and then get pissed off while you shoveling snow. Because you're being productive. You see what I'm saying? That's all of it's easier said than done. But for me, right now, it is the greatest thing for me because it's the fuel to my fire. It's like driving and I'm on empty and, you know, there's a gas can on the side of the road. All right. I see you, universe. You see what I'm saying? Like, for me as an actor, right, I really use all that stuff now because if there's a scene where I need to be sad or happy or mad or envious or whatever emotion it is, I can pull it out of my pocket and I'm there. And it's me because I feel it. I've felt it. I still feel it. I hold it. And I can channel that and use it in a positive way because I'm using it as a character in a movie or a television show.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So now that's me, right? But there's also another side of that too. I that's part of my hustle. You know, one of the sayings I used to say, hate only makes me stronger. You hate on me, the goal is to keep on hating because it's fuel for me because one day we're going to have to look each other in the eye.
Right.
And there won't be any words said, but you're going to have to look me in my eye and you're going to have to know you did me dirty. And right there is the greatest satisfaction if you ever get to experience it that there is. Not in a mean way, though, but in a way that I can look you in your eyes and you looking in my eyes. And I'm telling you, you tried to beat me down. You tried to stop me. You tried to hold me back. And here, you looking at me. You looking at me do something that you will never do or it's going to be hard for you to do because you spend all your time hating. You spend all your time negative.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? You can't even
right.
get out mm-hmm. your own way to do anything. Now, everybody's not like that. Everybody's situation is different. But for me, that's my gift, is to be able to talk to people for some reason.
I would definitely agree with you, DC. You definitely, definitely have conversations. You know what I mean?
Especially women, because I've been around a million strippers.
The rest of this beautiful, informative, and wonderful conversation will continue in part two, airing next week. I invite you to join us next week as we continue the conversation.
Thank you for joining Rochelle Marie Lawson on Blissful Living. To contact Rochelle Marie and to find out more about Blissful Living, click on Blissful Living for You link right here on the Blissful Living Network. Catch all the Blissful Living episodes on demand and available for download 24/7 on blissfulliving4you.com. Until next week, may your life be filled with peace, wellness, abundance, and prosperity.